Of the Nation, I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The CIA, the Justice Department, a federal judge, Congress, the 9/11 Commission, and reporters all have questions about the destruction of recordings of the interrogation of two al-Qaeda suspects. They're beginning to get some answers, but a great deal remains unexplained. Did the destruction of the tapes violate federal court orders? Did it amount to tampering with evidence? Was the White House, the president, or the vice president involved? Why didn't the CIA provide the tapes to the 9/11 Commission? And did that violate the law? We are starting to find out more about why the tapes were made in the first place and why the then head of the clandestine service ordered them destroyed in November 2005, and the House Intelligence Committee holds a hearing into the matter on July 16th. In a few moments, its chairman, Congressman Silvestre Reyes, joins us. Later in the program, teens, pregnancy, and taboos. Megan Dahm of the Los Angeles Times joins us on the opinion page. But first, the destruction of the CIA tapes. If you want to know more about the issues at hand, if you have questions about what happened, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with NPR intelligence correspondent Tom Jelton. Tom, nice of you to be with us.
Well, hi, Neil.
And over the weekend, you reported on why these recordings were made initially.
The official explanation that we've heard, Neil, is that the CIA, the interrogators, wanted to be sure that the enhanced interrogation methods that they were using, which we now know included this form of pressure as called waterboarding, where the detainee is made to believe he's drowning in order to get information out of him. The interrogators wanted to have some kind of a green light from the legal minds in the agency. So they had these interrogations recorded in order for the general counsel at the CIA to review them and to say that they fell within the guidelines that the Department of Justice set down for these kinds of interrogations in August of 2002. However, there is one other interesting aspect to the recording of these interrogations. The first big al-Qaeda suspect captured, Abu Zubaydah, as you might recall, was very seriously injured at the time of his capture. And the interrogations began before he was completely recovered, and there was still some concern that he might die during the time he was in CIA custody. And I've been told that one of the reasons that his interrogations were recorded is that they wanted to have a record to show how he was treated. Now, the significant thing here is that it was not just his interrogation that was recorded. There were several hundred hours of recordings of Abu Zubaydah, and much of it was simply surveillance of him in his cell. And I think the reason for all of that recording of him in his cell was just basically to document what kind of condition he was in.
The official explanation for their destruction was a fear that the interrogators themselves could be identified on these tapes, and that if the tapes got out, there would be a threat to their lives. And again, you've found out more about that.
Well, I think the thing is, Neil, it wasn't just a, I mean, that is definitely what Director Michael Hayden said as the official explanation. But I think beyond that, there was just simply a political fear, as it were, that if these tapes ever got out there, it wasn't simply the legal liability that the interrogators might face, but the ramifications that it could have for the whole image of the United States. One of the things that we have learned in the wake of the Abu Ghraib scandal is how much images matter in the world today. And we know how seriously the United States' image reputation was affected around the world, particularly in the Muslim world, as a result of those photographs of the mistreatment of Abu Ghraib detainees. Mm. And there was a fear that if these videotapes ever saw the light of day with images of CIA interrogators holding a guy's head underwater, that it would even dwarf the impact that those Abu Ghraib photos had. So even though I think, and here we sort of venture into speculation, I think the people that made the decision to destroy the videos thought that there would be some repercussions from it. I think they felt that those would be less in the short term than the long term damage.
You've also reported that these were not the only recordings made.
That's right, Neil. These are the only recordings that the CIA itself has acknowledged making. However, we now understand that other foreign governments while they had detainees in custody, made recordings of the interrogations of those detainees and subsequently turned those recordings over to the CIA. The context for this, Neil, is that the United States, after having captured some detainees, actually transferred them temporarily, in some cases, to the custody of other governments. And while in the custody of those other governments, other foreign intelligence services did the interrogating of these detainees and videotaped the interrogations, and then, as I say, shared those recordings with the CIA. Now, those recordings were not destroyed. Those recordings still exist, and I think we can presume that the reason that they weren't destroyed is because they don't show CIA agents doing the interrogations. And I would venture to say now, in the context of all this controversy over the destruction of the CIA-produced videotapes, these other videotapes are not likely to be destroyed.
We're talking with NPR intelligence correspondent Tom Gelton about the existence and destruction of CIA videotapes of interrogations, including harsh techniques, including waterboarding, a technique many regard as torture. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Let's begin with Troy. Troy is calling us from Iowa City in Iowa.
My question is, or comment is, have they actually subpoenaed the digital archive of the interrogation? More than likely, they emailed all those interrogations back to Washington. More than likely, they have it on some server somewhere of all the interrogations of everybody. Have they subpoenaed those?
Tom Gelton, what do you know about that?
Well, you're going to have Chairman Reyes on the line here shortly, who can talk about that. There is actually a copy of the subpoena that has come out. Now, the subpoena was not actually formally issued, and that is because the CIA agreed to cooperate with the committee. So even though a draft version of the subpoena was shared with the CIA, it was never formally signed. So at this point, we're still in the realm of voluntary cooperation between the agency and the House Intelligence Committee. So no subpoena has been formally issued.
So in other words, they're off the hook because they don't have to cooperate, and they don't want to because if it does see the light of day, it shares an unlikely atmosphere to the United States.
We don't know if they're off the hook yet or not, Troy, but I guess we're going to have to wait and see.
Okay. I just might add, Neil, that if this draft subpoena is still out there, and if Chairman Reyes and the other members of the Intelligence Committee are not satisfied with the CIA's cooperation, they certainly can sign this subpoena. And this subpoena does specify recordings of all types, and that would include digital recordings as well.
We're trying to get in touch with Congressman Reyes and not obviously arranged to speak with him at this time, and thus far we've been unsuccessful. Something may have come up in his office, so we'll have to hang on for that. But in the meantime, Tom, we've learned also through the New York Times that some White House officials, or then White House officials, were involved in conversations with the CIA about the about whether these tapes should or should not be preserved.
Yes, that's right, Neil. And also John Negroponte, who was Director of National Intelligence at the time. We now understand that there were fairly extensive discussions within the administration about these tapes and what should be done with them. And I've been told that the consensus between the senior leadership at the agency, the people that were involved, mostly lawyers at the White House, and other people in the U.S. government who knew about them, the consensus was that they should be preserved. And in fact, they were preserved. They were not destroyed. Those tapes were not destroyed until November 2005. They were made in 2002. So for almost 3 years, those tapes continued to exist. And they're really, I've been told, there really wasn't any sort of second guessing about the initial decision to preserve them. It was only after late in 2005 that the decision to preserve them was essentially reversed. And we can only speculate what led to that changing of minds. We do know that there was a change of leadership at the Central Intelligence Agency. Director George Tenet left and Porter Goss came in. There was also a former member of Congress. There was also a change, Neil, at the White House with Condoleezza Rice leaving to become Secretary of State and new people coming in there. Stephen Hadley became a National Security Advisor. So there was some change in leadership at both the agency and the White House, but other than that, we really don't know why there was a change in this consensus within the administration to preserve those tapes.
One subpoena, though, apparently has been issued, and that for the man who has been identified as the person who ordered the tapes' destruction.
That's right, Neil. That is Jose Rodriguez. He was head of the clandestine service at the time the tapes were destroyed. And the House Intelligence Committee did go ahead and issue formally that subpoena. Now, what Sylvester Reyes, the committee chairman, said is that for legal reasons, a subpoena was necessary in his case, that even though Rodriguez was willing to cooperate and even wanted to get his story out, that his lawyer had advised the committee that a subpoena would be necessary for him to testify. And, you know, there could be legal reasons for that, you know, the question, because there is a, as you mentioned at the top of the program, there is a Justice Department investigation that could ultimately lead to criminal investigation. I'm sure that Mr. Rodriguez and his attorney are concerned about immunity issues. There is probably some legal reason why they felt that a subpoena in his case would be necessary.
And finally, Tom, before we let you go, what do we know about this hearing on January 16th? Is this going to be a public hearing or is this going to be in closed session?
I would imagine it's going to be in closed session, Neil. These are so much of the matter here is classified. All of the hearings so far that have been held, Director Hayden has been up in the Hill several times. They've all been closed door meetings. The Intelligence Committee generally prefers to work behind closed doors because then they can discuss a lot of matters that they can't discuss in the open. What often happens, as you know, Neil, is that reporters and other people camp outside the doors and get people as they're coming in and coming out. But my guess is that Mr. Rodriguez will be testifying, should he appear on January 16th, behind closed doors.
And one more issue of legal import, and that's whether the CIA was obliged to turn this material over to the 9/11 Commission. The man who staffed that commission says they were, and that the fact that they didn't turn them over could be legally questionable, too. And there's all kinds of terminology being thrown around, including spoilation, a term I'd never heard before, as opposed to just merely destroying evidence. Anyway, Tom Jelton, we're going to all learn much more about this in the weeks to come. Thank you very much for your time today.
Of course, Neil.
We're talking about the investigation into the destruction of CIA interrogation tapes coming up. We'll hear from David Reams. He represents the Yemeni detainees at Guantanamo Bay, and also a former Justice Department lawyer, Lee Casey, on what all this means. You can also join us, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Right now, we're talking about the investigation into the destroyed CIA interrogation tapes. If you have questions, you're invited to join us, 800-989-8255. That email address, again, is talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us to tell us more about the subpoena of Jose Rodriguez is Democratic we had hoped to have Congressman Sylvester Reyes on the program. We've been unable to reach him thus far. If he calls in during this next segment, of course, we'll try to get him on the radio and see what he has to say. And if not, we'll reschedule the interview for a later time. But let's talk now with David Reams. He's a partner at Covington and Burlington in Washington. He represents Yemeni detainees at Guantanamo Bay, and he's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much.
Good afternoon, Neil.
And U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy Jr. in Washington said Friday that he would not rule immediately on whether to hold a judicial inquiry into the destruction of the CIA tapes. He had issued a court order asking the CIA to hold on to all evidence of interrogations of detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And I guess part of the government's response to this was these two gentlemen weren't at Guantanamo Bay.
Well, first of all, Neil, the order went way beyond the CIA. Our order required the government to preserve all evidence relating to the torture of anyone who was at Guantanamo. And therefore, it goes beyond these two particular tapes, and I'd urge people not to lose sight of the fact that the CIA wasn't the only one involved. The Defense Department was involved. The NSA was involved. The FBI was involved. So in our view, this isn't limited to one agency or two sets of tapes. The other point to bear in mind is that although many people have the impression that the government has said these tapes were made somewhere else, these guys weren't at Guantanamo, in fact, the government hasn't said that. The government's created that impression. But when we filed asking about the tapes, government didn't deny that the men were at Guantanamo, that is, Abu Zubaydah and al-Nashiri, mm-hmm. they simply said we hadn't proven that they were. They didn't say that the tapes weren't made at Guantanamo. They simply said we hadn't proved that they were. And the fact that the non-denial denials are the government's response to our allegations leads us to believe that maybe, in fact, the men were at Guantanamo, the tapes of them were made at the time, and that they directly violated the court's order with respect to these videotapes. We're trying to get the court to consider whether or not the government violated the protective order that the judge entered, and it goes way beyond these two videotapes.
The judge also seemed to be somewhat reassured that the Joint Justice Department CIA Inspector General inquiry would go into questions of whether the court orders were violated. He hasn't ruled yet on the motion.
We wouldn't have expected him to rule from the bench on the motion. There are two sides to this story, and he entertained the arguments. It wasn't so much that he was reassured that these other investigations were going on. He was questioning why he should proceed when these other investigations were going on. And the government didn't promise to report back to him. They simply said that if they, in their own discretion, determined that there was a violation of his order, they'd report that back to him.
As David Reams just mentioned, there's another side to this. Joining us now is Lee Casey, a partner at Baker and Hostetler in Washington, a former Justice Department lawyer with us on the line from Petersburg, Virginia. Very good of you to be with us on Christmas Eve.
Oh, thank you.
And I wonder, as you go into this question, it's not just basically, do you think that the destruction of the tapes may risk being in violation of the law?
Well, there is certainly that risk. I mean, that really is the question. These tapes, destroying these tapes would only violate the law if they were relevant to an ongoing proceeding or investigation, if they were subject to a live or an operative court order, or if they were subject to some other statute that required records retention. The answer to all of those may be no. The fact that the Justice Department in the hearing refused to confirm or deny that these individuals were at Guantanamo or simply said that the moving party, which after all Mr. Reams would be the moving party and would therefore have the burden of proof, all they have to say is you haven't met your burden. So, we don't really know what the answers to those questions are. That's what the department is investigating.
And that's, of course, what Congress is investigating, at least in part as well.
Sure.
And do you worry, Lee Casey, that as this case becomes more and more public, all this, of course, has happened in the last few weeks, that it's going to be intensely politicized?
Oh, I think it, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we can depend upon that. I think that's why the judge did the right thing on Friday and basically said, well, at least for now, we'll see what the Justice Department does. I mean, he could certainly come out with another ruling later on. I think people should, if they're serious about finding out whether a crime has been committed here, let the Justice Department go forward. Congress, there is no institution is better at messing up the potential for a criminal prosecution than Congress when it starts getting involved. That's what we saw with respect to the Iran-Contra affair when Colonel Oliver North was brought before Congress and later on his criminal prosecution pretty much fell apart. So I would say let the Justice Department do its job here.
And would that in your mind include a grant of immunity to Jose Rodriguez, the then head of the CIA operative who ordered the destruction of the tapes, apparently?
Well, it might. I mean, that it would depend on what evidence was turned up and whether they were seeking to determine whether someone higher up in the chain of command was involved. But that's something that only the investigators could determine.
And we'll get to phone calls in just a minute. But David Reams, do you trust the Inspector General's office and the Justice Department to thoroughly investigate this?
Well, my view is that it's the fox guarding the hen house here. After all, the Justice Department and the CIA are implicated, the Justice Department perhaps in its advice to the CIA and the CIA in its actual destruction of the tapes. I'd further make the point that we don't think it's our burden to prove anything. We think that now that the CIA has admitted that it's destroyed documents, it's the CIA's burden, it's the government's burden. And finally, the issue of responsibility. It really goes beyond these two particular tapes. There's a general obligation that lawyers have to preserve evidence that is potentially relevant to pending litigation. Not only was our litigation pending, but the judges of the district court had entered preservation orders that summer. And it's conceivable that the decision to destroy these documents was related to the fact that judges were beginning to enter orders saying, hold on to them. I can't directly cast aspersions on anybody, on anybody's motives, but motives aren't the question here. If they destroyed evidence, then there's a consequence in terms of how we get to argue these cases.
Lee Casey, do you want to come back on that?
Well, just to point out that documents are not evidence necessarily. And yes, the CIA destroys documents every day. The question is, were these documents relevant to an ongoing investigation or proceeding? And that's what the Justice Department is looking into. Keep in mind, of course, that if these documents were overseas and the individuals were not at Guantanamo Bay at the time they were made or destroyed, then it's unclear whether the judge's order, the judge in the D.C. District Court's order, covered them, or that it could cover them, that even he may not have had jurisdiction. I mean, these are all questions that are going to have to be decided by the people, in the first instance, by the people investigating.
Let's get listeners in the conversation. We'll begin with James, and James is with us from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Yes, I've got a question. There are obviously pending litigation by a number of the prisoners in this case, and assuming they have competent attorneys, those attorneys will have filed requests to produce on such documents as what evidence the government might have had. It would seem to me that under the normal case law that a request to produce, whether it's produced or not, is in effect an order to preserve. And it doesn't really matter whether the documents are overseas or not, because the law regarding this is got to do with whether it's under their control or not. Not the actual location of the document, but a question of control.
David Reams, I expected you would agree with James.
I would agree with James. When multinational corporations are sued, it's no defense that the documents were in a safe in Switzerland. And here in particular, where the government has the obligation to justify the detention of these men, it really is in the government's interest to destroy evidence that would undermine the credibility of the statements by prisoners who are accusing our clients. That's really the prejudice to us. And it doesn't matter if there was a particular order. It doesn't even matter whether there was a request to produce. What matters is that there's no doubt the government knew that these cases were going on. And when the decisions were made, remember, these decisions were made in November 2005, not at the time, somebody was thinking about what the litigation consequences would be, and they decided to run those risks.
Lee Casey?
Well, I think that's speculation. I mean, we don't actually know what people were thinking at the time these documents were destroyed. What we have been told by the CIA is that there was a concern that they might be leaked and that the investigators who were shown on the tapes might then be in danger. Their covers might be blown, and they might well be subject to reprisal. And I think that's a very real fear. And indeed, you know, the two individuals whom these tapes are in reference to are not the clients of Mr. Ream. Whether they might in some way be relevant is total speculation.
But doesn't he have the right to look at the tapes or the material from the tapes to see?
Well, not if they're classified. I mean, if in fact.
Well, then doesn't the judge have the option to look at it in camera and see if they're relevant?
Well, if it were determined that they were relevant, then the judge would indeed have to take a look. But it is here only speculation that they might be relevant. I mean, they involve other people, not his clients. I mean, you know, he might well just, you know, ask for my Christmas videotapes. I mean, maybe they're relevant, too. We don't really know.
David?
Well, it's not quite as wild as that. The fact of the matter is that 99% of the evidence that the government uses against our clients consists of statements made by other prisoners. And therefore, what other prisoners say is critical. It's their evidence. And as a result, any time that evidence of statements is destroyed. And I have to say to Mr. Casey that we do have security clearances. We can see classified information. And if, in fact, the two individuals at stake here or elsewhere made statements incriminating our clients, we have a right to know that. But, in fact, we may never know that because the tapes have been destroyed.
James, thanks very much for the call. Good question. We're talking with David Reams, a partner at Covington & Burlington in Washington, who represents Yemeni detainees at Guantanamo Bay, and with former Justice Department official Lee Casey, a partner at Baker & Hostetler. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's an email question from Sam in Wichita, Kansas, asking a question a lot of people are asking. I agree it's very disturbing the tapes were destroyed, but aren't there written records which could tell us what took place during the interrogation? Couldn't this written record be used to prosecute, if that's appropriate, those who may have broken the law? Are there logs of these tapes? Do we know that, Mr. Reams?
Well, in fact, we submitted to Judge Kennedy, in connection with our motion last week, a description of the records that were kept of interrogations at Guantanamo that were provided to us by a former interrogator. There was massive documentation. There was documentation by all the agencies involved, by the psychologists who were involved. There were other videotapes of other types of action against the prisoners, and so the questioner is absolutely right. There's a wealth of other evidence out there, and we hope we get the opportunity to examine it.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is going to be another James, this one from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yes, how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Yes, two comments. First of all, it seems to me that what's being lost is the enormity of the fact that we've been torturing, and it's known that we've been torturing, whether directly or indirectly, through rendition at Guantanamo. And yet people are talking about preserving people's identities. What's at issue here is that we get to the truth. The government's taking what I call a passive-aggressive approach, which is a sort of the mistakes were made, and then we're aggressively going to say that you can't prove it. That is really doing damage by itself to our public image. And we need an independent investigation. This is the Justice Department wherein Alberto Gonzalez was, and other officials in the Justice Department were supporting torture. They were arguing that it was all right and that we were somehow exempt from the Geneva Convention and other regulations. How can we trust that department now to conduct this investigation? Either Congress or an independent prosecutor should be doing this, and I'll take any responses off the air.
Okay, and I guess, Lee Casey, that's to you. Is the Justice Department the appropriate place for this investigation to be conducted?
Well, I think absolutely it is. I mean, whatever role that former Attorney General Gonzalez may or may not have had in this question, the destruction of the tapes, he is no longer there. Now it's Michael Mukasey, who I think everyone would, you know, admit was not involved in any of the decision making with respect to these tapes. He is clearly an independent actor here, and it is his job to investigate it. And also keep in mind that even if the judge in Mr. Reams' case decided to move forward and investigate, ultimately, if he decided that there were some wrongdoing, what he would do is refer it to the Justice Department, or at least to the local U.S. attorneys, and then on to the Justice Department. So, I mean, the Justice Department is clearly the appropriate entity here.
Mr. Reams, would you agree?
Well, I would have to remind people that Attorney General Mukasey refused to say whether he thought that waterboarding was a form of torture. That's the first thing I'd say. The second thing I'd say is that there is vast historical amnesia here. People only have to think back to when Neil and I were much younger men, and the Watergate episode every day brought a new revelation of wrongdoing. Everything was just the tip of the iceberg, leading to more and more revelations of wrongdoing, criminality, cover-up, and so on. I think these tapes are just the tip of an iceberg.
Well, that may prove to be the case, but we certainly don't know that yet. In any case, David Reams, thanks very much for your time today. David Reams, a partner at Covington and Burlington here in Washington, D.C., where he represents Yemeni detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And we'd also like to thank Lee Casey for his time today. He's a partner at Baker and Hostetler in Washington, with us on the line from his home in Petersburg, Virginia. And Lee Casey, again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up, Britney Spears' younger sister is now a teen pregnancy poster girl, but boy, has the poster changed. Megan Dom weighs in on the Talk of the Nation opinion page. Teen pregnancy just doesn't scare kids anymore. And we'll give the last note to pianist Oscar Peterson. The jazz great is dead at the age of 82. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.